Last week we went through an overview of halachos of Tara, the Zaynutiyim. First, I'll be done with the Hefsek Tara, which means that's day zero. It's important to realize that's not a day of Bedika, but it's a super Bedika necessary in order to prove that the Dam stopped. To change the Chazaka of Cheskas Tuma to Cheskas Tara. And then we have the Zaynutiyim, the seven clean days, which a woman has to count in order to make sure that she's Tahara. The most proper way to do that is to do two bedichos each day. We mentioned that Rav Wilk suggests always doing only one bedicha each day. And many Rabbanim suggest, even if ideally do two, the first thing to go is to do two bedicha, is to do only one each day if there's any cause of irritation. Similarly, there is a chumrah, the Shulchan Aruch quotes, between the Hefsek Tara and the day one of Zayin Etim to do Moch Tochuk. We mentioned Rav Wilk tells people not to do Moch Tochuk. He thinks it's a Chumrah for whatever reason that it's not necessary. And others suggest a woman should do Moch Tochuk. I usually tell people that even if they want to do it as a Chumrah, they should not do it for the first 6 months or year of marriage till they get the hang of things. And then if they want to take it as a Chumrah later, to do it then. But it's important to consult with whichever Rav you're going to ask Shilos to know what the stories, what his opinion is of Moch Tochuk. After the Zayin Etim are finished, the seven clean days, then a woman goes to the mikveh. Mikveh is attended on the beginning of the eighth night. So let's say, for example, let's say a woman started seeing on a Tuesday. So let's just think how the cheshbon would work. If she started seeing on a Tuesday, so we know you can't start counting Zayin Etim before 5 days. So Tuesday is day zero. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Her Hefsek Tara is going to be on Shabbos. And that means her Zayin Etim are going to be Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. She'll go to Mitzvah on Motzei Shabbos. So again, it's important to keep in mind. Period started on Tuesday. So that's Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Shabbos, which is day five, cannot count as one of the Zayin Etim. But the Hefsek Tara can't be done on that day. And then, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos, are 7 days of Zayin Etim. The eighth day, which is going to be Motzei Shabbos, Saturday night, she's permitted to go to the mikveh. And the halacha is the tefillah has to be, everyone get the cheshbon before we go on? Okay, it's important to realize the two things that are confusing are, number one, that day five can't count for Zayin Etim, but it can count for the day of Hefsek Tara. And then number two, after Zayin Etim, you have to wait another night to go to Mechuk. Maishi?
There's no problem with Dika on Shabbos.
No problem with Dika on Shabbos. Right, it's a question why it's not a problem of Tzevea. Pashim Shabbos said, Tzvichu Shad L'Nicho, you don't want it to become bad, but that, we presume that it's Mutter to Dika on Shabbos. It's just important to keep in mind, this is not something to pass on yourself, of course, but to know that although we always mention that 5 days are necessary, the Sfaradim have a Chumrah, a Kula, that they only need to wait 4 days. Rav Adya writes that it's really not so practical because most Sfaradim should wait 5 days anyway. But Rav Moshe has a kula, he writes in a tshuva, that for certain situations where it's going to cause a problem, let's say the husband is coming up to the bungalow colony, he'll be there for Shabbos. If she waits till, and let's say he'll be there Saturday night also, if she waits till Sunday night, he'll already be going back to the city. So Rav Moshe writes, in certain situations, it's possible for a woman to go to the mikveh after 4 days before the Zayin Etim instead of 5 days. Now, practically, it's not so relevant, because the average period we mentioned lasts around 5 days. So saying she can start counting after 4 days doesn't usually help. But every so often, it's important to know that that exists. Again, not to pass on yourself, of course, but to know that Rav Moshe does have a certain situation that he discusses, which is an important thing to discuss with a Rav if it comes, if it's necessary.
What's that situation?
So Rav Moshe talks about a certain situation where, let's say, the husband's going to be away for a whole other week. If she, so then he,
like on business.
Right, let's say, or let's say in the bungalow colony, people go up bungalow colony only on weekends. That's Rav Moshe's situation. But it depends on each situation. It's just important to know that it exists. Tefillah, as we mentioned, has to be after nightfall. What's nightfall? We presume nightfall is a machlokas. It manifests, of course, the most common machlokas we see as far as when Seis HaKrovim is when to daven Ma'ariv on the average week, or when to have Shabbos over. But usually you presume that even if you're a machmir as far as Shabbos, you can be much more makel as far as nightfall for going to the mikvah. Rav Willig, as his makel, he thinks, after 20 minutes, it's already enough. That's already considered after night. Others say, let's say, half an hour, but very few people would say you have to wait 72 minutes to be after night. I'm sorry, after Shia, 20 minutes after Shia, 20 minutes after sunset. It's important to realize when you talk about going to mikvah at night, that means even going to mikvah on Friday night. Friday night is a night like any other night. The only two times a woman will not go to the mikvah is Leil Yom Kippur and Leil Tisha B'Av. But other than that, every other night of the year the mikvah is open. Yom Tov, Shabbos, always mutter to go to the mikvah.
Do women actually go on Friday night?
For sure, all the time. All the time, for sure. So we'll talk about it in a second. But it's important to realize that's a normal thing. In fact, approximately, barring unforeseen circumstances, 1/7 of women should be going on Friday night. Now, of course, it's not always possible, but that's usually what happens. And ideally, Friday night, like in Riverdale, for example, Friday night is very easy to go to the mikvah, because if the mikvah is open 20 minutes, she can go into the mikvah 20 minutes after Shtia, so then all she needs to do is to go to the mikvah, and she can already leave and go to shul, let's say, and the shul is still in the middle of davening, because 20 minutes is not so long after Shtia. Some people are unfortunately running into mikvah still 20 minutes after Shtia. She can go in, leave the mikvah, and then go to daven. So that's a very normal thing. In other communities, it's not so easy. For example, Breuers has a rule that a woman can't go to the mikvah until an hour after Shtia, usually. So if they have a rule, can't say anything about it. Most communities are not like Breuers. Breuers is one tehillah. But it's important to know, if you're at mercy of the community, you can't do anything about it. But barring that, we presume 20 minutes is enough to go to the mikvah after Shtia. Going to the mikvah is so important, b'zman, that it should not be delayed. Whatever the reason, I think Rav Neuberger just has a story once. There was a couple that was in Orlando, and there was no mikvah right near Orlando, so they wanted to delay, and he said, no, you shouldn't delay, it's not right. They said, the kids are in the cars, tell the kids you're going for a drive. So they went with the kids to the drive, the kids didn't know what they were doing, and they went to the mikvah that night. Even though I think the story was that they were all going to be in one room. There was budget vacation in. So the husband and wife and the kids were in one room, and the husband and wife were not going to be together that night. Still, it's not right. It's not correct to keep any harchatos, any distance between husband and wife, longer than necessary. And it's very important to go to mikvah when the earliest time the woman can. There are some, Alpi Kabbalah, that say that a woman should not go to the mikvah if the husband is not home. Let's say he's out of town. She shouldn't go to the mikvah until he's coming back. We presume that there's no concern. We're not concerned with that Kabbalistic idea. But even more than that, it's not so practical, because often in today's day and age, we know how travel plans can change in a minute. So when he thought he would be home 2 days from now, he really decides to come home tonight, and if she didn't go to the mikvah, then it's not right. They're together in the same house for no reason, and they're going to be prohibited to each other for no reason other than that she didn't go to the mikvah. So always, whenever she can go, whether he's home or not, she should always go to the mikvah as soon as possible. Before a woman goes to the mikvah, she has to remove all chatzitzos. Chatzitza means anything which is not a natural part of her body that could stop water from coming, and anything which is a natural part of her body that's not necessary. For example, a stab on her body, if the stab is necessary, then of course that's part of her body. But if the stab is really falling off, it's just going to be something which needs to be loosened a little bit, then that should be taken off. In fact, as we'll see in a minute, women usually rinse themselves for a while before the mikvah. So if they rinse themselves for a while before the mikvah, usually the stab becomes loosened there. So, but again, it's not any stab which should be on, should not be taken off. If it's something which is loosened, should be off anyway. So there should be no chatzitz on the body. Not only that, even any open part of the body, such as the mouth or inside the nose, where water could reach, even though water doesn't have to reach there, it has to be fit for water to reach there. Which is why there's a serious shiloh, let's say, if a woman has a temporary filling, or a temporary, something temporary, you have to ask the Rav what the story is. What about if a woman has a broken bone? It's an important shiloh to ask. She has a cast.
Braces.
Important shiloh to ask. Someone asked me the shiloh today. So we usually presume it depends what the situation is. If it's something which is supposed to be there for a long time, even though it's not part of the body, if it's supposed to be there for a long time, connected to her body, often we're made though, but it's a very important shiloh to ask. There's a famous question in the Post, what about an ear infection? A woman has an ear infection, she can't get the ear wet. What does she do? These are all discussions that the Post have. It's important to beware. And of course, we know the most important rule, of course, is Asel Charav. You have to ask, for sure. And any complex chatzita issue, it's important to speak to a rabbi about. Before the woman goes to the mikveh, she is supposed to do chafifa. Chafifa means to clean herself with water as well as brush her hair. She has to brush her hair to make sure there's no knots and nothing which is stopping the water from going. Because if you think about it, if hair, let's say 5 pieces of hair are tied into a knot, that's going to be a strong enough knot that stops the water from going there as well. So she has to comb her hair as well as take a bath. We presume that a bath is more ideal. If she only has a shower, that's also okay. But she should wash herself well and not quickly. We presume it should take a while, so that everything is benachas. And ideally, there's a machlokes rishonim, if she's supposed to take her bath and do her preparations the day before, meaning if she goes at night, does she do it before sunset? Or does she do it right before she goes to mikveh after sunset? How do we pasken? Machlokes, ideally do both. Starts before sunset, goes till after sunset. But, in today's day and age, of course, often it's highly impractical. You can't do it. So if a woman wants to take a bath, let's say, before she goes to work in the morning, that's mutter. She wants to take it in the mikveh after she comes home from work at night, even though it's, let's say, in the winter and it's 3 hours after night, that's also okay. But ideally, try to do it from before sunset till after sunset. And preparation should take a while, half an hour, an hour, because it's important for her not to be rushed. Take her bath, make sure everything's clean, women cut their nails, and make sure that there's no chatzitza altogether. And again, comb her hair, make sure there's no chatzitza in her hair.
What's that called? Chafifa.
Chafifa means to brush. To fade. Going to the mikveh on Friday night often is something which is very, very prevalent, but not as prevalent as any other night, which is why whatever community you're in, it's important to call them up beforehand, to speak to them about an appointment. For example, in Breuer's, it's necessary to make an appointment beforehand because once husband and wife have kids at home, it's hard for wives to get out sometimes. So in bigger communities, the mikveh was open Friday night in general. But in most communities, such as Breuer's, which are smaller, you have to call beforehand. In some communities, you have to call every night beforehand to make sure that someone's there. So it's always important if you're in a strange community to call. But in many communities, especially Friday night, to call just to make sure that things are going to be okay. Friday night, as we mentioned, we do not delay going to the mikveh, and it's important to go on Friday night like any other night. The one difference is a woman can't wear makeup before she goes to the mikveh, so if she's going to go to the mikveh right after Shabbos, she shouldn't put makeup on right before Shabbos, which sometimes is a little bit awkward. And there is one way, which depends on the community you're in, to sometimes get around the difficulties of Friday night meal. Often, Murphy's Law, on Friday night, sometimes you have like your whole extended family over just when she has to go to the mikveh. So any other night, you could call them come a little later, but everyone knows when you eat Friday night, right after shul. So right after shul, if you're in Riverdale, like I mentioned, so she can come back, she'll be in shul before everyone is home, she'll able to cover everything. No one knows what's going on. But let's say in Watch the Nights, she's going home after everyone's already home from shul. They're only, where is she? So there are some communities in which you can make an appointment to go after the Shabbos meal. So you call them up. Let's say call them up 11:30 at night. As long as you tell them beforehand, some communities don't mind doing that. And that's one way around the problem of Friday night. But it's very important to use Friday night as a paradigm. The Rama writes that the women have a custom to keep the night of tefillah clandestine. They don't tell people about it. Now, if you think about it, in the days of the Gemara, everyone knew who Anita was. Because Tumah V'Tahara were very apparent, or in the days of the Mishnah earlier, days of the Beis HaMikdash, everyone knew if this person was Tahara, this person was Tumah. A Baal Keri, a Nido, all the people we read about in the past week's Parsha, all had halakhic status that had to be taken care of. So the fact that a woman was a Nida one day and not a Nida the next day was something that no one thought twice about. Nowadays, the only reason a woman goes to the mikveh, of course, is with her husband. And since it's a sexual matter, that's not right. A woman shouldn't say, okay, I have to hurry up, that night I can't do it, I have to go to the mikveh. That's not correct because she's therefore talking about the fact that she is not permitted to her husband, then I should be permitted to her husband, and all I could be with her husband that night, which is not an appropriate thing to discuss with any other people. So the Ramah writes, it's a minhag to keep the leil tefillah under wraps. Is that always necessary? Well, there's a case, there's a woman who is handicapped, who could not go to the mikveh by herself, so whenever she did her hefsek tahara, she knew a week later she was going to the mikveh, she made an appointment with two of her friends to take her to the mikveh. You know, Adim Nashim Hashtadol Tefillah, and they keep it quiet? Yeah, if it's possible. But it's very, very, very important to be in the realm of normalcy as far as that's concerned. It's not something to be embarrassed about. Everyone knows the mikveh. It's a normal thing to happen. And there's a mikveh in Muncie, a gorgeous, gorgeous mikveh, which is every chumrah in the book and every electronic gadget in the book. It's unbelievable. And one of the ways the mikveh is built in Muncie is that I think no woman ever sees another friend of hers, another woman in the mikveh, meaning that so many entrances, no one ever knows who else is in the mikveh. And they did originally said a mother and a daughter wouldn't necessarily be in the mikveh at the same time, but the problem is, it's a very beautiful mikveh, but often people might get the mistaken impression that being in the mikveh is something we're embarrassed about, so okay, hopefully no one knows. And that's unhealthy. It's not a healthy thing. Yes, it's important, it's a minhag to try to keep it as quiet as one can. But one can doesn't mean, let's say, often a woman asks a Rav Ashayla, or a man asks the Rav Ashayla, my wife needs to go to the mikveh this Friday night, what should she do? Either Rav knows, the Rav doesn't care, he puts it out of his head. But people sometimes are so inhibited, they don't ask, that's terrible. Sometimes women are so inhibited, they're just not going to the mikveh. Yeah, it's important not to advertise it, but if you can't do anything about it, tacha. For example, in Breuer's, the mikveh is within, close to the community is not so big. And that's definitely not an ideal place for mikveh to be. It's very bidyevet, because it's a block away from the shul. People could see what's going on. But because of safety concerns, they didn't want to put it anywhere else. That means women should go to Riverdale, let's say, a place where the people don't know them so that they can be more under wraps. No, you have to use your head. You can only do what you can do. And it's very important to have the sensitivity, on the one hand, to be sensitive, to be tsanua. On the other hand, to realize you can't be crazy. Because if you're crazy, it often leads to more harm than good. For example, someone in the shul, people are going away this yontif, 3-day yontif. They need to know what day to mikvah, the night of the first seder or the second seder. So you're concerned, people are going to know. So usually people are not going to know. Let's say they're staying by their in-laws. So the mother-in-law or the mother knows. Okay, that's definitely not ideal. But what are you supposed to do? It's not something to drive you crazy. That's normal. People go to mikveh. That's a normal part of husband-wife relationship. It's the normal way Hashem made the world. It's not something to be totally embarrassed about that you have to go crazy about. It's very important to have the sensitivity on the one hand and on the other hand as well. Obviously, a lot of halachos of specifics of tefillah are discussed more between the kala teacher and the kala. We don't need to go into them because you're not the ones who are going to the mikveh, but just know there's a lot more about tefillah. These are just the general background. It's the background that's important to discuss. The Ramban and the Rambam have machlokes. We know according to the Torah, it's prohibited for a husband and wife to be together intimately when she's an Ida. If a husband and wife are together, have sexual relations when she's an Ida, that's like Ida and Yom Kippur. The violation is Kares. However, what's the halacha? Is a husband allowed to touch his wife when she's an Ida? There's a machlokes between the Rambam and the Ramban if that's also included in the issue of Daraisa. That's not going to be Kares. The question is that included in the prohibition according to the Torah or not? However we pass it, it's definitely prohibited according to the rabbinic law. Definitely also in the Rabbanon. And that's a paradigm. It's not only that that's Asr Midrabanan. There are many other things that Chazal added that are Asr Midrabanan. And if you think about it, this is really what makes Hilchos Nida more apropos. The fact that husband and wife cannot be together intimately is one aspect of Nida. But the fact that Chazal added many other things makes Nida a lot more of a part of a person's life. These are called the harchatros. Harchatros were things that were added by Chazal in order to make a person more careful not to be together with his wife when she's in Ida. And as we go through the harchatros, it might seem that some of them are a little bit machmir, some of them are a little bit strong. It's hard to understand. The person can say, listen, I know, I don't violate Shabbos Chas V'Shalom, I'm not going to violate Nida. Why did Chazal need to put all these chumras in order to make a person not violate Hilchos Nida? And it's important to realize two of the several answers that exist this question. Firstly, there's a mushal I often like telling people. There was a person who went to the Grand Canyon, and
he was astounded by the beauty of the Grand Canyon. He took picture after picture after picture of the gorgeous sights that he saw, Colorado River, sunset, and he showed them to his friends and family. He had a slideshow, and they loved it. A few years later, he came back to the Grand Canyon, starts walking up to the end to take the picture, and he realized he can't go to the end where he usually went a few years before to take pictures. Instead, there's a big fence blocking him from reaching the end. And he's fuming mad. He says, I don't understand. I got gorgeous pictures because I was able to go right to the edge. What happened? What's this fence doing here? He calls over the park ranger and says, I don't understand, sir. What is this fence doing here? And the ranger says, well, we don't want people to fall off. He says, you see me? I'm here. I was here 5 years ago. I didn't fall off, so I don't need a fence. So he said, the ranger said, I understand you didn't fall off. We didn't put the fence there for you. We put the fence there for those that did. And it's important to realize that as far as the Harkos as well. Even if a different person thinks that he or she is strong enough not to need the Harkos is meant for the entire Tzibur. And even if you were not Nechshel, you never know, Chas V'Shalom, but even if you think you won't be, they're meant for the entire Tzibur, not for any specific Yachid. But more than that, what happens if a woman is taken captive and she's put into solitary confinement? No man, no woman, no guard is allowed to see her. And all of a sudden, the woman becomes pregnant. The halacha is, who's considered the father of that woman? Her husband. Because the Gemara says, Ein apotropis l'arayos. There is no guard vigilant enough for arayos. When it comes to sexual matters, anything can happen. It makes no sense. She's in solitary confinement. We still say, if there's a will, there's a way. You never know what could happen. And it's important to realize with that mindset, with sexual matters being such a strong drive in humanity, that indeed, even though a person thinks that he or she are not going to be nechshel chas v'shalom, Chazal wanted to make sure, because of this mindset, ein apotropos l'arayos, that Chazal wants to help a person make sure they will not chas v'shalom violate halachos of nida. And these halachos, which are rabbinic, can be viewed on two levels. As I mentioned originally, the first way they can be viewed is just like Hilchos Megillah. Hilchos Megillah, Drabbanon. These are also Dinim Drabbanon. But of course, these are a little bit harder, and it's important for a person to feel licensed sometimes to feel that these are a little bit hard. Often what makes Hilchos Nida so hard is not the fact that husband and wife can't be together sexually for a week or two, but the fact that they have more distance that the Harkatos bring. And it's important for a person to feel, if you really feel it's hard, you're allowed to feel it's hard. That's not normal. That's very normal. On the other hand, I mentioned previously, there are two approaches when the Jews came to America from Europe. Those that said, it's hard to be a Jew, ended up with kids that were not religious. And those that said, okay, it's hard. I agree with it, it's hard, but life's not always so simple. I can deal with it, it's fine. Baruch Hashem, I have Torah mitzvahs. Not every mitzvah is as easy as the other mitzvah. It's a much healthier attitude. So, on the one hand, you have license to feel that it's hard sometimes. On the other hand, to realize, yes, Torah is an avodah. It's not always so simple. But we don't say that, it's so bitter, chas v'shalom. It's a beautiful zuchus. We have to have halachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. The simplest halacha, of course, is no touching. But no touching means not only can a husband and wife not touch, they can't even touch with another object, such as, let's say, a back scratcher. He can't scratch her back, even though it's not touching directly, that's still usur. The next group of harchatos are harchatos that apply during a meal. Meals, unfortunately nowadays, lost their significance. Everything is top shop, everything is fast food, and meals, people just try to eat as quickly as they can because they have so many other things they have to do. But in theory, meals can be more of an intimate time together. In fact, that's why people when they are seriously dating go to restaurants and overpay for food because there's an ambiance, so you can eat with other people. This way you have more fun. Have not other people that create your ambience. But seriously, we know that food is something which can be create a certain mood. And because food can create a certain mood, Chazal added certain halachos specifically when we deal with food. For example, a husband and wife are not permitted to eat at the exact same table when she's in Nida. What does that mean? Sounds very machmir. It means that they need to have some hecker, something which makes them realize that she's in Nida. Just like a person who's eating milchut can't eat at the same table with a person eating fleishuk, they have to have a placemat
or these Svarim, let's say, something that would separate, make them remember that they can't pull from one another. Similarly, they need to have that as far as Hilchos Nida concerned as well. So, let's say husband and wife are eating at this table, wife is sitting there, husband's sitting there, they could have this MP3 player. That would be enough. It's not a placemat, that's a hacker. Now the problem is if they're listening to music, if they're using it during the meal, that's not so pasha, because a kli which is being used during the meal cannot be the hacker. Then it should be on the table anyway. But if it's something which is not being used, such as, let's say they have apple juice and orange juice, they're only drinking orange juice, an apple juice container would be a good enough harchaka as well. Alternatively, if they have, let's say they're at a restaurant, and they have the napkin holder, and they're not using the napkins, that's permissible. Anything which is not being used during the meal is a good harchaka. We presume this harchaka applies whether they're in private, such as in their own home, or with others, such as in a restaurant, or in an in-law's house. But the exception is, if a husband and wife are eating at a table together with other people, the harchaka is not necessary. So if other people are at the table, that's fine, eating with them. But if husband and wife are the only ones at the table, even if other people are moseying on around, that's not good enough. Now, it takes a little bit of tact. If husband and wife are in their in-law's house, and other people are around, you don't want to put a big hacker between husband and wife because people will know what's going on. There's no need for people to know what's going on. We try to keep the neither private. So use your tact. If they get pizza from the pizza store, if he uses his, let's say, bag, he gets a falafel and uses the bag the falafel is on, that's a hacker. There's two different things, like milk and facial. As long as one of them has a placemat or something separates the two of them, that's okay. So if you think about it, your mind can be creative. It's very easy to think of different achotos, different ways of showing different hacker, which keeps this achot.
Has the bidafka in between them? Like,
someone in between them. Meaning if it's on the table over here, totally not involved, that's probably not good enough. But it doesn't have to necessarily be, it's not a mechitza. As long as something which is reminding them, that's okay. The point is we don't want them to see intimacy or to stretch over. So as long as there's something which, to remind them, that's enough. It doesn't have to be directly between them. The next harchaka that exists as far as meals are concerned is serving. Here we presume that the husband has more of a driving force in sexual activity, and for some harchakas we're slightly more machmir in the husband than the wife. The wife is not allowed to serve the husband directly. And there's a discussion in the post, and we try to be machmir for all these. That means two parts. The wife cannot portion food onto a plate for the husband, or the wife cannot serve the husband. The wife cannot pour a drink for her husband, or the wife cannot put the drink in front of the husband. One or the other. So this, again, discussion in the postman if it's both or not. We try to be mapping for both. The preparing, as well as the serving. However, there are a few exceptions. If he can't see what's going on, even though he knows it, that's okay. So let's say she takes apple juice out of the fridge and wants to pour it for him, and she goes in front of the counter. He's at the table. So if she's blocking what's going on with her body, he can't see her pour, that's okay. And he knows what's going on, he sees her do the action, that's fine, as long as he can't see it, because if she's blocking with her back, that's okay. Similarly serving, as long as he can't see it, that's okay. And what about serving him, if let's say she portioned it in the kitchen and he didn't see, we try to be machmir even for the serving. There we presume if she serves with a certain shinui, it's permissible. So let's say she puts it in front of him, but instead of using her right hand, which she normally serves with, she uses her left hand. If she's a lefty, she uses her right hand instead. That's okay. Or if she puts it not directly in front of him, but a little bit ahead of him, and then he has to reach for it, that's also okay. As long as there's something strange about the way she does it. The Rav Avadya is Maitil, and Rav Will passes this way as well, that all these chumras we're discussing as far as serving only apply to drinks, not to food at all. Nevertheless, it's a machokas hapostim, and many are machmir for both food and drink. And again, that's both the pouring part, the serving, the getting ready in the kitchen, as well as the serving. Ashina will be Maitil for both.
Why would you say drinks and not food?
It's a discussion based upon where it comes from. The source seems to refer to that for drinks, as well as to food, so we don't know if it has to be math anymore.
We know that of all beverages, the most intimate beverage, of course, is wine. And therefore, aside from the ideas of pouring and serving in general, Chazal added a certain halacha that specifically applies to wine. A husband is not allowed to send his wife a cup of wine, which means he can't even pour wine from his own cup and say, "Here, dear," even if he puts it down and they don't touch each other, he can't send her a special cup of wine which is earmarked for her. Of course, this comes up most prevalently when Kiddush. What do you do for Kiddush? So for Kiddush, there are three solutions. Number one, he can pour, let's say, the cup into a few different cups and then pass those around. So when it gets to her, she'll take her cup. But if there's none that are earmarked for her, that's okay. The problem is, of course, if she's sitting right next to him and he passes it around, and then he's still sending her wine. But if, let's say, she's at the other side of the table, machlokas, where wife should sit next to husband or across from husband. If she's sitting across from husband and he just sends it and it goes to her, that's okay because there's none that are earmarked for her. Next option, which might be halakhically okay, but as far as germs are concerned, not so ideal, is if he takes his cup and he sends around his cup to the whole family and they all drink from that cup, that's okay because it's not earmarked for her. But the solution that I usually tell people, the most ideal solution, is ironically, even though he can't send her a cup, she's allowed to drink from his cup. Which means that if she's sitting next to him, he should drink from the cup. If he puts it down next to her, that's sending her a cup. But usually you presume that a cup has a little silver plate that it was on. So he drinks, puts it back on the plate. He didn't send it to her. And then she picks it up and drinks from it. That's okay. Now, if the silver is on the right side and she's on the left side, he puts it on the left side, that's not ideal. That's not okay, that's still sending it to her. But if he puts it back, returns it to the place of rest, and she takes it, that's okay. So Chacham should put the place of rest near his wife to start off with. This way he just makes the Kiddush there, drinks, and puts it back there. That's the normal place it was before. I usually recommend people do this both when she is Tahara and Tameah. It's the normal way of doing things. This way no one knows what's going on. That's the normal way you do it. Why not? No one has any idea if it's a needless situation or not. Right. Exactly. Right. He puts it down, then she can take from it. And again, it only applies to wine. He's allowed to send her beer, schnapps, even though those are alcoholic. That's not the same intimate situation as wine. Although she's allowed to drink from his wine, he is not allowed to eat from her leftovers. If they're at a restaurant together, let's say, and she doesn't want to finish her main, he can't finish her main and eat from her leftovers. However, there are a few exceptions in which he is allowed to eat from her leftovers. Leftovers, of course, means both food and drink, meaning he can't drink from her leftovers, he can't eat from her leftovers. If the food is changed to a different plate, then he's allowed to eat from the leftovers. Or if the drink is poured to a different cup, he's allowed to drink from her cup. Let's say they're touring, for example, let's say they're in Eretz Yisrael, and she has the canteen. So if she drinks from the canteen first, then he's stuck. Can't drink from it unless he pours into another cup. So there are two solutions. Number one, let him drink first. Number two, if they're in a family canteen and they're not concerned about germs, if she drinks and someone else drinks in between, that's okay also. So let's say she drinks, then she goes, oh, now he can't drink. They give it to their kid, the kid drinks a little bit, and then he eats, then he drinks, that's mutter. So number one, he's allowed, he can't drink from her leftovers, but she can drink from his leftovers. So if he drinks first, that's okay. Or give it to someone else in between. Or third solution is if she leaves. Now, leaves doesn't mean she needs to go to Kentucky. It means she goes to another room. So if they're in a tefillah in Eretz Yisrael and she goes around the bend, then he can drink from the canteen again. That's okay. Right, that's okay. Exactly. So those are three exceptions to him not being allowed to drink from her leftovers. Number one, he drinks first, then it's not leftovers. Number two, he drinks, someone else drinks in between. Number three, she's not there, that's mutter. In fact, the poster even say that if she goes away and then she comes back, he can still keep on drinking. Once he starts, it's okay. And of course, if it's in a different plate, let's say if they pour into a cup, even though she doesn't contaminate the canteen, if she drinks from it, then
he pours into her cup, he's allowed to drink from her leftovers, even though it's technically her leftovers. So now what do you do if you're in a restaurant? Let's say she orders a steak and fries, and she decides she does not want to finish everything. So Rav Moshe has a kula and a chumra here. Rav Moshe's kula is that if she just wants to eat the steak, even though the fries are on the same plate, the fries are not considered her leftovers. If she didn't eat the fries, that is not leftovers. That's a separate dish. She ate the steak. The fries are totally okay. He's allowed to eat them even from her plate if he wants. Now, what about the steak? So Rav Moshe says there it depends. We only say the leniency of moving something from one plate to another if it's something that you would share with a friend. For example, let's say if two guys go out to eat, they go to Prime Grill, they spend $80 on a steak, and he doesn't want to only wants to have the steak. Most few people, even though they're a little bit germ freaks, would feel okay having that guy's $40 left of steak, even though it's not so sanitary, because you don't want to waste the Prime Grill steak. So then he can take it, he can't eat it in her plate, that's her leftovers, but he can move it to another plate and eat from her plate. And eat from his plate, even though it's her leftovers. But says Rav Moshe, if it's something that no one would eat from another person except if they're married, let's say soup, for example. Soup. No one would eat soup, finish after soup, and then say, okay, I don't want the soup, you want to eat it. That's just disgusting. Husband and wife might do it, they have a more intimate relationship in general. So Rav Moshe says, there, just taking the soup and putting it, let's say, in a different plate, it's not going to be good enough, because no one would do that. It's disgusting. So there, the only reason they're doing it is because their husband and wife still has the intimacy, even though they move it to a different plate. So Rav Moshe's kula is that you look at each dish b'asher hu sham, even if they're all on the plate, the same plate, each dish is considered a dish by itself. So if, let's say she has half the French fries, he can't have the rest of the French fries on the plate, but if he moves them to another plate, he can. People always share French fries. But if it's a situation where she is going to share it with him only because they're married, then even moving to a different plate would not help. Let's say a chicken leg. So she has half the chicken leg. No one else has their friend's half chicken leg. So Rav Moshe says, if you move it to another plate, that's not going to help. That's still her leftovers. But if you have a situation which it's not so intimate, then it's mutter to move it to a different plate.
Is this decided on a personal level? Let's say I would eat chicken leg.
Yeah, it probably is. Right, if you're not a
German,
right. Yeah, it's more a matter of intimacy also. Sorry, it's more intimacy also. Meaning, let's say, depends on the situation.
Depends on the friend,
okay. But sometimes it's not only germs, it's also just a sensitivity. People just feel, as they say in vernacular, grossed out. But just doing it, you don't do that. So, let's say if you feel grossed out, you can't do it. Fine, then in a chanami. Right, then you're eating from her plate, because that's not considered Shirei Michael. Rav Moshe says Shirei Michael means things that she actually ate, even though the dish is part of it. That's not going to be a problem. The next group of harachotos that we have are harachotos that deal with more intimate situations. The most intimate room in the house, of course, is the bedroom. And the halacha is that a husband and wife cannot sleep on the same bed when she's in either. Same bed means, even if they had a super king-size bed, the size of this room, and he's on one side and she's on the other side, that's still usher. It can't be the same kli. They can't sleep in the same bed. Which means that a husband and wife have to have separate beds when she's in either, which is why in most Orthodox homes, of course, they have two different beds. How far apart do the beds have to be? So the Iker halacha is that we presume that separate bed means not only do the beds have to be separate, but any extension of the beds have to be separate. For example, they can have two beds which are connected by a headboard, because that's essentially one bed. They can have a headboard if they want. The chap, the person wants a headboard, if you want one headboard, is to have one of the beds unscrewed from the headboard. Then the headboard won't fall off, and then it's not going to be connected. But you can't have a headboard connected to both, because that's really the same bed. What about, let's say, if they have comforters that are flowing over that touch each other on the floor? That's also not right. That's considered the extension of one bed. So there's no halakha how far beds have to be, except it has to be far enough that no extension of one bed touches the other bed. And the other differentiation the Postum points out is that it has to be that if they're so minuscule, let's say you only have sheets, so they're mamish an inch apart. If you could roll from one to the other, then technically they're really the same bed, even if there's a tiny crack. So not only do we need there to be no extension from one to the other, it also has to be that, as they call it, the roll test. You can't roll from one to the other because that's really all the same bed. So as long as you can pass the roll test, there's enough of a separation that you can't roll from one to the other inadvertently in the middle of the night. And no extension touches, that's far enough. However, there are some that are machmir. We do not think this is a necessary chumrah to have two separate beds that are separated by a, let's say, nightstand. That's not necessary. Api halacha. However, it's up for you to decide with your kala if you think it's prudent. Because if you have two beds that are just close to each other without anything in between, that means that during part of the month you have to separate the beds, and part of the month the beds are together. And that means if a person goes into your room, they'll see where your wife is holding, which is really not appropriate. So it's sometimes recommended that either every morning you move the beds back together so no one knows what's going on, or what many people do, this is a common thing, to have two different beds which are always separated by a night table. However, the beds are beds, this is in Brooklyn what they call prum beds. You buy beds which are larger than normal beds. This way, during the time of the month that husband and wife are permitted, they're welcome to share the same bed. That's up to them. But they can keep the bedroom furniture the same the whole month and no one knows what's going on. So it's not necessary as far as halakha to keep the night in between, but I'll be one's own sensitivity. If a person desires, you should just know what's out there. Many people buy twin-size beds and think that's the best thing. It's important to know that there's a famous store in Brooklyn that sells what they call frum beds. It's somewhere in between. Full-size beds are a little bit too big, so sometimes in apartments it's hard to put two full-size beds. It's somewhere in between full-size and twin, so big enough that two people could be in the same bed, but it's not big enough that it's going to make the whole apartment too tight for comfort. So again, a halacha, it's not necessary, but it's important to just for your own make the decision yourselves. If you'd like to get that furniture, so just be aware that the mile of that, you keep the entire bedroom layout the same the whole month, and what goes on behind closed doors is your own business. No one has to know what's going on. As opposed to if there's two beds you're always moving, then it's hard. There's someone I know who they used to have, they had two beds, and they during the time that she was in either, they used to move a light, a fixture between the beds to make sure that the beds stay separated. And then one time, one of the kids came in and said, "What's that doing here?" They noticed something's fishy. Why is that going on? So the better, the more you can keep the room staying the whole month, the better, just for your own convenience. There's no reason to have people know what's going on. Another chumra we have with beds, another achatra, is that he cannot sit on her bed as long as she's in the city. Even if she's not at home, he can't sit on her bed. Since her bed is more of an intimate place to be, he can't sit on her bed. She can't sit on his bed either. But there's one difference. He can't sit on her bed as long as she's in town. She can't sit on his bed if he's home. If he's not home, she's allowed to sit on her bed, she's allowed to sleep in his bed. So let's say he's away on business for a night. Is she allowed to sit in his bed and sleep in his bed? Yes. Let's say she's away on business for a night. Is he allowed to sleep in her bed and sit in her bed? Yes. But if he's away, let's say he's a doctor in a hospital, he's on residency 2 blocks away, she's allowed to sleep in his bed, but the other way around would not be permissible. Not only that, even making beds, she's not allowed to make his bed befanav. Since making bed is more of an intimate situation, so she can't make it in front of him. Now, it's important to realize, truth to be told, there's a discussion in the postroom, what does this mean, making beds? We presume making beds just to make the room look nice is permissible. But making beds in order to be making the bed, which is more of an intimate connotation, is not correct. So what part of the bed is more intimate, what part is to make it look nice? Is making the sheets considered more intimate, or the comforter? So the postroom has a discussion about this. Some think that the comforter is always mutter because that just makes it look nice. And other things, the sheets is just making the bed, that's just making it, so that's not considered a problem. So some say, each one says the other thing is mutter. It's better to not do any, since it's so easy, it's only befanav. If he closes his eyes, even if he knows what's going on, it's okay. Just close his eyes, why not be machmir, just let him turn away, close his eyes. But strictly speaking, there are definitely parts, there are some of us that say that each part is mutter, but I think it's better to just close your eyes. There's no reason. Now, as far as, nothing with Nida, as far as Shalom Bayis, whose job is it really to make the beds in general? That's his job altogether. He should be the one to do it bechlal, then you don't have the problem altogether. The more he can do in the housework, the better it is in general. Another halacha that we have that applies with things you lie and things you sit on is that any bench that moves, they can't sit on together. So let's say they're in the park, they want to sit on a swing, they can't swing on a swing together. They feel each other's weight. Not only a swing, even a couch. If he sits on this cushion and she sits on the cushion next to him, usually the cushions push each other and then can't sit on the same couch together. If they're far enough, they don't feel each other's weight, that's permissible. Or if someone's between them, that's mutter. So let's say they're on a romantic walk in the park with their son. So he sits on the swing, she sits on the swing, the son's on the swing also, that's okay. Because then someone else is between them. But if it's only their weight, that's not correct. So that's true with a swing, true with a couch. In any situation where they feel each other's weight, it's not correct. Can they go on the seesaw during the time of the month that she's in either? Of course not. You can't feel each other's weight. This comes up very often in the Murphy's Law case. Husband and wife go to a chasana. He sits in the front. She sits on the other side. They drive to the chasana. Then they meet another couple. The couple wants to have a ride home with them. The couple wants to have a ride home with the other couple. Fine, so the couple realizes, the second couple that asked for a ride knows that she's an Ida. They can't touch each other, and they can't be in the couch, which they're going to feel each other's weight. So two people in the front, two people in the back, no sweat. All of a sudden, as they're about to leave, some other guy asks to come with them as well. So now they're in a compact car. Husband and wife are in the front. Husband and wife, who's an Ida, are in the back with some other person. So depending on the gender of the person, let's say some other guy, so it'll be now other guy, husband in the middle, and wife. Now what do you do? He doesn't want to touch his wife because she's an Ida, and he can't even be on the same cushion as her. So Rav Moshe writes in a shuva that's permissible. That there we say that Rav Moshe has a whole discussion that there is not really the weight of the people, it's the weight of the car, it's really connected to Mechubah Karka. So when I say we're Mekel, Rav Ulad always says in that situation, but they still can't touch, which is why, of course, why Hashem created purses. That's what pocketbooks are for. If she brings a purse, we know women always bring purses to chasanas. So she has her purse between them, so they're not touching, even though they're both up against it, they're not going to be touching. And as far as this chumrah, that usually they can't feel each other's weight, in this situation we're Mekel. Now, Rav Moshe points out, as Rav Wood always says, that during the curves, they have to try to mach, they have to know mental telepathy. If during the curve she turns that way, he should turn that way. Meaning they still have to make sure not to touch each other. That's not correct. But as far as the chumrah of being on the same couch, that we're making on in cars if necessary. Another chumrah, another achata that we have, aside from meals, aside from beds, is that he is not allowed to stare at any part of her body that's normally covered. Ravadia points out, staring doesn't mean seeing. Meaning, if in theory they feel comfortable enough changing, getting dressed in the same room as each other, that's permissible even when she's in Ida. Even if out of the corner of his eye he might see a part of her body that's normally left uncovered, because the point is he can't stare at it, can't direct his gaze at it. It's not that it can't be totally in the realm of his vision. But he can't stare at any part of her body that's normally covered. Says Rav Moshe, even though he can't stare at any part of her body that's normally covered, we are makel as far as hair. Hair is normally covered. But since it's normal for her to walk around at home without hair covered, she may walk around without hair covered when she's in Ida as well. Rav Wild uses that yesod, that whatever is normal for her to wear inside the home, even though it's not considered tsunua outside, as a major paradigm. Again, can she walk around without her hair covered outside? No. But does she cover her hair inside the house? No. When she's in Ida then, does she need to keep her hair covered in front of her husband? No. Even though it's an erva technically, that's still okay. Rav Wilk says the same thing is true for any other part of her body. For example, let's say she wears short sleeves at home. She wouldn't wear short sleeves way above her elbow out in the street. But since it's normal for her to wear t-shirts at home, that's not a problem even when she's in Ida. That part of her body is normally covered outside. We don't use the outside as the gauge. We use what's normally done for her at home. To the extent, what if she would, let's say, wear shorts? If she normally wears shorts all the time at home, that's permissible even when she's in Ida. She would never go out with shorts outside. That's okay. As long as it's normal for her to wear shorts at home, that's okay even during Ida. Where does that stop?
So we presume there's a difference between, as Rebbe calls it, extremities and torso. The torso, that's ikar erva, that can never be uncovered when she's in nida. Extremities, let's say arms and legs, there it depends. If it's normal for her to keep it uncovered, then it's permissible. If it's not normal for her to keep it uncovered, then it's going to be a problem. So let's say his wife always wears, let's say she always wears a tank top at home. Can she wear a tank top when she's in nida? No. The tank top's going to have a V-neck, let's say, going to show more than just her arms. That's, even though it's normal, that's off limits. But if it's something which is, let's say, less than that, just shorts and a t-shirt, even though she wouldn't wear it outside, that still is mutter for her to wear at home, even when she is in nida. It's important to know there are those in the Sifri in Eretz Yisrael, many of the chumra to keep hair covered during nida, but usually we're not machmir on hair covered, and certainly anything else that's normal is not necessary to cover when she is a nida. We'll stop here.